There's all kinds of interesting things going on this week, and the one thing that strikes me every time we have that first part of Ephesians read is the reminder that that's a single sentence in Greek. Verses 3 to 14. I'm sure I've told you this before, but on one of my Greek finals, our blind translation was taken from the book of Ephesians because it's so different than everything else, and the chances of anybody recognizing it were essentially zero, to the point where at least one person wrote on the exam paper that, is this even from the Bible? It's different, it's wonderful regardless. And it talks about God and Jesus in a particular way that I thought it would be useful for us to think of at this sort of the first Sunday of the calendar year. It's always handy that we get a couple of years to kick off every time, with the first Sunday of Advent and now the first Sunday of January, and to think about what do we have in Jesus. And as is so often the case, it's easy for us to sort of focus on one thing about Jesus and forget about the other, assuming that we want to break it down to just those two, Jesus' essential divinity and his essential humanity. But it's obviously so much more than that. And when we look at what Paul writes about in Ephesians, we see all kinds of things that we also get because we are in a connection, in a relationship with Jesus. Because what we see is Paul walking through this, well, it's sometimes called a doxology, this sort of almost a hymn of praise, this ongoing speech about what does it mean that God is interested in us at all. And he begins with praise, of course, which is the way that Paul begins pretty much everything when he talks about God, praising one way or another. But then he goes on to talk about how it's through Jesus that we receive so many of these things. In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins in accordance with the riches of God's grace. And a little bit further down, and he made known to us the mystery of his will according to his good pleasure. Further on it says, in him we were also chosen, having been predestined according to the plan of him who works out everything. And then in verse 13, and you also were included in Christ when you heard the word of truth. All of these things are an outcome of Jesus coming here. And it doesn't mean that these things were impossible before that. I mean, obviously, people before Jesus had an understanding of God that was sufficient for them to begin the relationship that we see laid out in the Old Testament. There was an authentic relationship with God then. It was different, though, after Jesus came, because we now have this new insight into who God is through Jesus. And one of the things that Paul goes through in this section, and then we'll talk a little bit about John as well, but one of the things that Paul says is this is what happened. When Jesus came, these things came in a new way. It doesn't mean that before this, that we hadn't been chosen. It doesn't mean that before Jesus came, that there was no word of truth to be heard or any of those things. What Paul is talking about is how there was an expansion, a new way of us understanding God and being in a relationship with God that arrived at the same time as Jesus did. Didn't take away anything that was there before. Jesus himself said, I came not to abolish the law, but to fulfill it, to make it complete, to take all of its loose ends and tie them together. So instead of having all of these hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things to remember, you remember the one thing. Jesus said the most important thing in all of the law is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And that encapsulates everything in the law. Sometimes heard it said that Jesus came to both simplify the law and make it a lot harder. Simplify it because he got it all the way down to two from the hundreds that were there in Leviticus and Deuteronomy and all those books and all those laws and regulations and commandments in the first five books of the Old Testament. So it's easy, except it's harder. In the Old Testament, you're told exactly what it means to be a good, righteous person. You follow these things, you do these things. In the New Testament, Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. It's a little fuzzier. It's a little harder to hold on to It's simpler but harder at the same time. It's also better. The older I get, the less I have a facility to remember long lists of things. I'm glad I only have to remember two when it comes to knowing what my responsibilities are before God, rather than all the rest. I just finished a little while ago writing out the book of Leviticus. It took me a while, and I was surprised at what I had forgotten was in there. I don't think I'd do any better if those were regulations that I was committed to following. We then turn to the gospel according to John, the unusual gospel, the one that is so different than the other three. And we see John struggling to describe what it means that Jesus came. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was God in the beginning is John trying to help us realize that Jesus is more than just a prophet, more than just an excellent teacher, more than all of those things. Jesus was God. He was with God in the beginning, because we have to use language like that. Because Jesus has always been with God. Jesus has always been God before the beginning, because there is no beginning, but we don't have any language to talk about an eternal being that works particularly well. But what John is reminding us is that Jesus was always with God. It wasn't a new thing. Or he wasn't a new thing. Him coming to earth was new. The incarnation was new. In verse 10, John tells us he was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. And I've often wondered what John was getting at there. And I think what he was trying to help us see, because we need to remember, and it's easy for us to forget, odd as it seems, but it's easy for us to forget that John was a Jew. He was someone steeped in the Old Testament. And I think what he's trying to help us realize is that even these people who knew everything there was to know about God, that God had allowed to be written down on pieces of paper that we could study, we still didn't recognize Jesus when he came, because he was so different. Even though the prophecies that are talking about Jesus coming are very clear, they're clear to us now when we look back. We look at Isaiah through the lens of Jesus. We look at Jeremiah through the lens of Jesus. Coming out from the other side, they didn't recognize Jesus for who he was. And John reminds us that even then he came to his own, but his own didn't receive him. And then expands it beyond those and says, yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. It was expanded beyond a genealogical connection to Abraham. You didn't have to have that anymore to have this connection with God. To all who received him, to all who believed in his name, all of those, all of us, become children of God, every much the same way, even more so perhaps, than the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The patriarchs did one thing. Jesus did something more and went beyond any kind of blood relationship with someone who had been there thousands of years ago or hundreds of years ago. And in all of this, verse 14, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only. But the glory we've seen wasn't the usual kind of glory, not back then, not now. I mean, when we think of glory, when we think of seeing someone in a glorious way, what do we think of? Well, I'm sure it's different for all of us, but it probably has something to do with, well, I don't know, big cars or being on a big stage or something that makes this particular person different. And John is saying, well, we saw this, but the man looked exactly the same as anyone else. Jesus didn't look different, no matter what the Renaissance painters were trying to portray or anyone else. Jesus didn't have a halo when you saw him. He looked the same as everybody else, except for a couple of moments. The Mountain of Transfiguration is the one that leaps to mind. Jesus was the same, and yet he brought something new. He brought a glory of humanity. He brought a glory of the created order that was easy to miss before. It was easy to look at God as being distant before Jesus. He created it, made it all, and so everything that is belonged to God and was created by God and had a connection with God. But you didn't see God. You weren't even allowed to see God. Even Moses didn't get to see God. He just got to see the glory of his passing. But with Jesus, that changed. And when Jesus took on human flesh, when Jesus became part of the created order, it reminds us that when God made it all in the first place, he said it was good. Jesus came and said that the physical world is of eternal value. It always has been, but it was easy to lose sight of that. All of these things are what we get when we have Jesus. It says in verse 16 of John 1, "From the fullness of his grace, we have all received one blessing after another." All of these things that we have, they come from Jesus. From Jesus as God, as creator to begin with, and then in a new way, a new understanding from Jesus as the Son of God, as the incarnate God. And I've always been struck by verse 17. "For the law was given through Moses." Doesn't say it was a bad thing. Doesn't say that a poor law was given through Moses, but said this was one thing. The law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. I like law. I think it's important. It allows me to plan my life, my daily life, because there are laws. I know I don't have to worry about somebody driving down the wrong way on a road or that sort of thing, at least generally speaking, because we have laws about all those sorts of things. Law makes a lot of things easier, but I die without grace. Grace, that unmerited favor that comes from God, the unmerited favor that we extend to other people when we extend grace. The grace and truth that come through Jesus Christ are the things that take us beyond keeping track of everything in a ledger book in our head to know what we've done right and what we've done wrong, and hoping that the balance is what it should be. Because grace doesn't keep track. Grace doesn't ignore what's wrong, because grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. It's the both. And I don't always know how that works. I don't know how... Sometimes I don't know how I can react to the truth of someone's behavior with grace. And I struggle with that. But I'm grateful it's there. Because without grace, none of us really have a chance. All of us have sinned. All of us have done those wrong things. All of us have done what we knew we shouldn't do, even as we were doing it. And all of us have not done those actions that we knew we should, and we just didn't. And law is going to add those up and see where the balance comes. Grace is going to say, "Yes, I know. But you're forgiven." Grace brings with it the possibility of sinful people like me having a full relationship with God. Not that grace means I can ignore my behavior and depend on grace to an absurd way. But grace says that I've got a chance, and more than a chance. Grace says that Jesus came for people just like me, to redeem people just like me, that we might know God now imperfectly. But at one point, when that day comes, we will know God perfectly, even as we are known. And it's grace that's going to open those doors, and has opened those doors. And of all the many things that we have in Jesus, we have an introduction to grace. Amen.